Please space yourselves out.
You guys should space yourselves out, for social distance, physical distancing, yeah. He's here and over around, yes.
Right, I'm going to, call this, meeting to order for the District Education Council for Anglophone School District West. And the time is, on my computer, 7:01 PM. As we have done in the past, I want to start our meeting by acknowledging that this meeting is being held on the unceded, unsurrendered territory of the Wabanaki people. Next issue I want to address before we start our normal agenda items is that we received, news yesterday from the superintendent on the passing of both a student and an employee of Anglophone School District West. This indeed was very sad news, and thus on behalf of this council, I wish to offer our sincere condolences to the family and students and staff of Woodstock High School, as well as to the family, staff, and students of Nashwauksess Middle School. Our thoughts are with you. I acknowledge, in the room our counselors, the Vice Chair, Mr. Willis Carr, Mr. Jim Mills from Sub-District 11, Mike Mazarol from Sub-District 9, Janet Dean, Sub-District 8, Mary McLaughlin from Sub-District 7, Jessica Martin from Sub-District 3, and I represent Sub-District 13, Town of Oromocto Schools. David, would you introduce staff members present, please?
Sure. Good evening, everyone. Welcome. And as always, Carol Clark-Catterini is here this evening as Executive Assistant to the Superintendent and the Council. And we have a number of staff members that will filter in and out throughout the evening to try and keep our numbers at the maximum. At this time, we have four educators in our room. The Director of Curriculum and Instruction is Diane Kay. Coordinator for First Nation Education is Sarah Francis. Lead on the First Nation Education team is Molly Brown. And coordinator for Science is John Hoyt Hallett. So, Carol, I'll look. Is there anyone online as well?
There is. Our Director of Communications, Jennifer Reed, is online.
Thank you.
We also have from Brunswick News, Doug Dickinson, and we have a guest by the name of Jennifer.
Lovely. Thank you. I acknowledge also a member of the public here in person tonight. Thanks for coming.
Could you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Darren McKenzie. I'm a longtime counselor from Village of Hanwell, just outside Fredericton, for people that don't know where it is. And I have a bit of a history, I guess, going back with the deck, come to meetings for pretty much the greater part of 2013, I guess it was. Was it David or something like that?
Probably.
Probably something like that. Just want to wait for the public session tonight, a couple of comments in, and thanks.
Thank you. Welcome. All right. You've all had the agenda in front of you. Are there any additions or deletions from the agenda that you wish to make? I'll approve the agenda by consent. Sorry, Jim.
Maybe if we had time, just talk about local permit at the end of. I was just at a PSSC and there were just some concern over the availability of substitute teachers and the availability of replacement EAs. I know you've got EAs on there, but we could just add that in there. Where you've got educational assistance, if we could just talk about
local permit.
Yeah.
Okay.
An item from one of my PSSCs raised.
Second, sorry. Sorry, again, Mary.
One of my PSSCs is asked if I could bring forward an issue that they're having at their school. It's a, if we could add that under.
New business would be. Okay.
Thank you.
Just kind of put down PSSC issue. Do you know which school it is?
Montgomery.
Montgomery. Okay, so adding to the agenda on new business, besides educator assistants and local permit educators. And another item being PSSC issue Montgomery School. Anything else? If there was amendments to the agenda, do I have a motion to approve that? Wallace, seconded by Marion. So approved. Okay, next item on the agenda is a review of minutes of our public meeting on 23 September. And if you'll recall, we had two action items on that. And both of those were completed. Do you have anybody else any comments on that? Okay. No errors or omissions, so that's completed. Thank you. Motion to accept those minutes, 23 September minutes. Mike?
I'll second.
And seconded by Jessica. All right. Wallace,
okay.
Science presentation by Mr. John.
Thank you all very, very much for the opportunity to come and speak with you tonight. I want to take this opportunity to talk to you a little bit about the new science curriculum that is being released. It was released this year and is going to be fully implemented next year. So we'll take a little bit of time to sort of talk to you about what that means in terms of some changes. And then I have a quick activity for you to do that sort of highlights the shifts that we're seeing in science education. So we'll kind of move forward with that. So the next slide sort of talks a little bit about sort of the implementation schedule for the new science curriculum. So the new science curriculum has been released this year, which basically means teachers have access to it. And the goal for this year is for teachers to become familiarize themselves with the curriculum documents, to start looking at the underpinnings of the philosophy behind the switch, as well as to start looking at ways that they might want to present it next year. So this year is very much just a year to sort of become more familiar with the changes. And next year will be the first year that this new curriculum from grade 3 to grade 10 is implemented in classrooms. The biggest change that this new curriculum provides is where the focus of the curriculum lies. Historically, the curriculum that is used in grade 3 to grade 10 is one that focuses on knowledge outcomes, the focus being on units and knowledge and discrete units. The shift that's happening is one to now that is more skills-based, so looking at skills from a science literacy standpoint and looking at how those apply to help solve problems and issues that students recognize within science and as well as in their daily lives. So that's sort of the big shift that we're seeing, and that's what we're working this year to support teachers as they make that transition next year. I believe the next slide sort of talks a little bit about where we're providing that support for teachers. So we have the new documents. They're available on the EECD website. They're also available on ASD West, so teachers can have a look at the new curriculum document, become familiar with it. There's also a document that we've created that summarizes some of the changes of the document, sort of looking at the new document and helping teachers see what the shift in terms of pedagogy and assessment. So how are we supporting the implementation? The next slide that we're looking at talks a little bit about professional learning. So professional learning is sort of the major focus of this year for the science team. One of the things that we've started over the last number of years is instead of working as just Anglophone West, we work very collaboratively with the entire subject coordinators from all Anglophone school districts, the East, the South, and the North, and the West. We actually met this morning for several hours talking about the very PL that I'm presenting here. So we have collaboratively designed professional learning opportunities for teachers so all teachers from grade 3 to grade 10 across the province are receiving the same message, so there's consistency in both the approach and the message that is being delivered to teachers. The way that we're delivering this, again, something that was promoted and brought to our attention last year with restrictions of COVID and sort of face-to-face, is we're using a digital platform called D2L. It's a platform that teachers are familiar with. It's how most of the online virtual distance learning classes are promoted here. But it's an online platform that allows teachers to access professional development sort of in a self-paced asynchronous. They can consume it in the evenings or on the weekends. One of the things we discovered last year is that release time, sometimes it's difficult to find supply teachers and things like that. So we're allowing teachers to sort of do it self-paced and asynchronously so they can do it on their own. Again, this PL sort of...
Tissues right there.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, sorry.
We have a first aider in the room.
Keep your head down.
Right back.
Okay. The old way is to tilt it back, but now it's down.
Is that the new way now?
I'll fill in for a little
bit. All
right. So John's actually going to have you go through a little bit of an activity that's used as part of the professional learning. So he'll be back in a second, I'm sure. We're going to be COVID sensitive, so I'm just going to dump a couple of Starbursts out here for everybody. And there's more than what you're going to need, but I'm just very sure.
Me, we might need these.
David, I didn't. Oh, you guys can
hear me.
All right.
All the probability.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Thank you.
There.
I know.
So, as part of the professional learning that's happening in our schools across the district, the coordinators are working across the province so that we're not having four separate districts kind of creating all the same things. So it's very collaborative. A lot of things are going to happen the same, whether it's in the north, the east, the south, or the west. The other piece is that there's a platform, an electronic platform that's being developed so that when professional learning is developed by our coordinators and teachers, it's going to be accessible to our teachers asynchronously. So we know that our teachers doing professional learning, sometimes we can bring them out, but because of COVID, we've learned that we need to be very flexible and offer professional learning sometimes when it's most convenient to the educator. So we've had teachers do professional learning on the weekends, whatever, and we're kind of helping them with that opportunity as well. And it's all designed and housed on a platform which we call D2L. And if you've been in some of our post-secondaries, use that similar platform. And the professional learning, I'm just jumping in here to help you out.
Sorry about that.
So the professional learning does embed high-yield instructional and assessment practices, and that's part of our plan is how do we support that and move that forward. And I handed out some Starbursts to get you ready for the next step.
my apologies to Matt. So one of the things, it is very much a collaborative approach that we're using at the science to support this implementation across a very large spectrum. So again, like I'd mentioned, the major shift that we're seeing is sort of knowledge to one that's more skills based. So part of what I have brought here today is a little quick activity to sort of explore what a skills-based activity would look like. Again, this activity isn't grounded in any knowledge outcomes that you would see in the science curriculum, but the great thing that we see in the science curriculum from a skills standpoint is that the skills are the same from grade 3 to grade 10. They just increase in complexity and the layers and the language that is used to explore them. So today, I think on the next slide, What I've asked you to do, and I thank Diane for handing those out to you, is I'm going to ask you to take a candy, a Starburst, and I'm going to ask you to unwrap that Starburst using just one hand.
I'm a mom. Yeah, this isn't hard.
You can do this. Left train.
So what do you do if you got no fingernails?
That's true. Yeah, you one hand, only nothing didn't say one hand and mouth. No.
See, if I was home, I'd use one. Let's go.
So as you're doing that, I want you to make note of what did you observe? What did you wonder? Was there anything you anticipated? Did you come up with a prediction? And things like that. In a classroom, what we would do at this point, and I understand with COVID restrictions, I won't do it today. I've planted some for you. We would hand out sticky notes for the students to brainstorm. So each student would have a chance to sort of present their own wonders, observations, and predictions. So one of the things that you might see in the class, we have done this with students, and these are some of the responses that you get. What did you wonder? Or what did you observe? Sorry. It was hard to unwrap. Anyone find it hard to unwrap? Was it easy?
It was
easy. My classmates were faster or slower than I was. It's always a competition. My server's wrapper was stuck to the candy. It's unfair. Mine was stuck. If you're stuck, mine was stuck. My starburst or so-and-so's starburst was half unwrapped. Students are very worried about that. So then you start getting students, what did you wonder? So all of this is to get students to start thinking about an activity and how does that spark a wonder, a sense of curiosity. Would I be faster with both hands? Is it easier to unwrap a purple, pink, yellow, red, orange starburst? It's color, but it's faster. Are all starbursts wrapped the same? Is it easier to unwrap a warm or cold starburst? And then you always get the interesting ones. Why are people left or right-handed? So that's an awesome question. It may not fit in with today's exploration, so I'm going to take that, I'm going to put that aside, and that might be something that we explore and investigate the next day. The next thing that we would do, so these posters are part of a series from Smarter Science Framework, which is a resource that we're using to sort of help teachers visualize the scientific process. So what we would do at this point is from this, we take our sort of wonders. We'd ask students to think about what were the things that we could measure with this type of activity, or something that we could measure while we unwrap a wrapper. So some people would say, well, time, how fast can I do it? And maybe, well, how many? How many could I unwrap? You know, a minute to win it. Kids love minute to win it. So how many could I unwrap in a minute? And then you start thinking about, well, what are the things that would affect how many or how fast you could unwrap them? Well, handedness. Well, I'm left-handed. What if I use my left hand? What if I'm right-handed? Color. Well, maybe pink is easier to unwrap than red. Number of hands. Well, I could do it way faster, twice as fast, two hands than one. Could you? Temperature. Well, warm candies are way easier to unwrap than frozen or cold candies. What about if you did a blindfold? Would that improve or slow down? Yeah. Then what you can do from that, then you start a conversation around, well, what are variables? What do we call dependent variables? What are things that you are in charge of changing? And what are independent variables, the things you're going to measure? So then we start using generate, and we put, what is one thing I will change? So for this, I'm going to say handedness. So I'm going to get you to do it with your left hand or your non-dominant hand. And then we're going to time you and see if you're faster with your dominant versus your non-dominant hand. And all of these other things, we're going to call them controls. So we're going to keep them all the same. We're going to keep the color the same. We're going to keep, well, you can all use your hands. You're all going to use non-dominant and then dominant. And we're all going to make sure that they're the same temperature. So those are the variables that we're controlling. So it's, again, we're starting to deepen the investigation in science. We want to investigate one skill or one outcome. And these are all the variables we're going to control. And then lastly, we would use that to develop a hypothesis. This is the foundation of scientific exploration and investigation, so sort of an if-then statement. So then I would use these and say, if I change the hand that I use to unwrap my starburst, then I will be able to do it faster or slower. And we use this to sort of guide our scientific exploration. So again, in this type of experiment, developing a hypothesis from a very easy, fun activity is something that students do from grade 3 all the way up to grade 10. So we've done this with elementary students, and we've done this with grade 10 students. And the grade 10s are often more competitive than the grade 3 students. so that's a little bit of a shift, whereas before, the goal of this activity might be to focus on the scientific principle that you're exploring. With this activity, the goal is in the developing of the hypothesis that is testable and consistent. I apologize for the brief interruption. And you're free to eat the candies. Usually we don't eat candies.
Anybody got questions for John?
Yes.
What happens for grade 11 and 12? What's the differential?
So the when you hit grade 11 and 12, the biology, physics, and chemistry classes, physical geography, environmental science, human physiology, those classes still have a curriculum. And currently, those are based more on knowledge. But with students that have a skills-based experience from grade 3 all the way through grade 10, the hope is that those classes, when those curriculums become updated, that they will also take on a more skills-based approach as well. But at the same time, we recognize, and today's society is a great example of that, the importance of scientific understanding and principles. So although the focus is on science skills, the context and the concepts that we use to explore are still very, very important.
Any other questions?
Be happy to know, John, that I was in a school today, and as a science teacher by trade, when I walked by a classroom where a chemistry lab was underway, I stopped
right in. Nice.
And they were identifying unknown liquids.
Oh, perfect.
Using litmus paper and a conductor, right?
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
It was good. It was nice to see kids engaged in hands-on activity.
Those are my
favorite
classes. Yep. I would suggest wrapping it back up with one hand.
Excellent. I love that.
Too late, I ate it.
There's usually nothing to wrap back up.
I don't think candy's meant to be wrapped back up.
Thank you, John.
Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you very much.
You guys are in the back.
The next two that could
Thank
come
you,
in.
Thank you, Sarah, also, and look forward to hearing from you again.
Good.
The next two that can come in, Diane, are Jay and Jason.
I wasn't even in the nosebleed section.
Jay, you'll be back. With that.
I'll do the COVID report, but he'll sort of be
bad.
Okay, moving along. For the new deck members, different presentations, they all should all have a hands-on aspect of things. We did last year, or the last couple of years, and they're kind of interesting what activity comes out. Some are kind of amusing. Welcome. Please face yourself out, please. Okay, going to business arise and events. I have Clever Train down there. All I want to do here is remind you, you received Clever Training from Susan Young previously, and I've asked her to come back once we have the full deck complement in-house to do another presentation. So they will get that also, and you can also ask questions if you're having difficulty with that platform.
If I may, maybe in our next working session too, if we could kind of just go over how to apply what we learned to what we're actually going to be scoring and whatnot.
Okay.
I think that would be helpful.
Yeah.
But I wasn't tracking some of that, and it wasn't working.
Maybe a little more detail.
Yeah, and I don't think we'd need Sue there. I think it would be more just like a peer-to-peer kind of, here's what you're looking for, here's what you got to do. Yeah, yeah. Probably a quick 15-minute thing.
Question for you. I think our 4th November one is too soon to have her in for that with a new member at the same time, but we're...
I don't think so. I think if she gave a quick refresher and then showed the application.
Okay. And the new members will just have received their laptops. And things.
Will the laptops be there and be ready?
Let's ask her to come for that meeting, and if we need a subsequent presentation, we'll do it.
She'll come. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I mean, we're in a four-year time span here. We want to make sure we get it right to start off with, okay? So that'd be good. So if she could come, that'd be great. David?
Great.
Again, a reminder for those who are comfortable using the platform to make sure you do your scoring for the previous presentations that have been given. Under subcommittee commitments, I just gave you a little note there, what we agreed upon, who's who in the Zoom and which committees and such. Specifically for the one that Jim has volunteered to do, the Evaluation Advisory Committee on Curriculum. We've submitted his name for that. We submitted his resume for that. That's been acknowledged by Kimberly Bauer and the department. And as I explained to Jim prior to the meeting, that his name will go forward to the minister and eventually to the premier, apparently, before the appointment is made, along with the various representatives of the other four, other three Annapolis districts. And the other thing I want to mention is that I reached out to the department on my appointment to the Teacher Certification Appeal Board because I never really received a response back from it, and I was told that I was appointed effective 18 December 2020, and that appointment is good for 3 years, so that one's kicked off. Anybody have points? Any other points there? All right. Under new business, hold it up.
COVID update. So I'll share with you some information about COVID. Usually I just sort of talk about what's happened over the last month or so, but I collected a little bit of data along the way, and I think it's important that I share some of this with you. Papers are getting spread out here now. So first of all, since the last time we met, although I've advised you in writing, I'm pleased to share here tonight and reintroduce Jay Colfitz. Jay Colfitz is the traditional director of school for the Woodstock Education Center, and he's been his...
There's only two returning.
Introduction. It's an introduction for the first time. That's right. Yeah. And Jay is the director of schools for the Woodstock Ed Center. You might remember we have three Ed Centers. Wayne Annis is the director of schools in Fredericton, and Gina Dunnett is the director of schools in Oromocto. And I should also note for the Oromocto Ed Center, this confuses a few people sometimes, but for the whole balance of things, there are five schools on the northeast side of Fredericton that fall under the Oromocto Ed Center. Barker's Point, Gibson Neal, Devon Middle School, Nashwauk Assist Middle School, and Leo Hayes. So,
all of them.
All yours, or?
All of mine and one of hers.
Okay. Four and one, yes. So that's just to balance out responsibilities. Something we learned very early in amalgamation. I'm off track. Jay, as the director of schools, and as a true partner in those first 4 weeks of school this year, as we responded to many, many, many cases of COVID, most of which were in the Woodstock Ed Center, Jay became quite proficient in supporting the district in response, as did Jennifer Reed, who is online and can hear us right now. I'm sure she'll give Carol a thumbs up in the screen. Jennifer, as the Director of Communications. So in the beginning, it was mostly Jay and Jennifer and me who sort of responded each time there was a COVID case that arose. And then we reached out to different, you know, we'd involve the principal. We'd involve someone like a Sue Young if needed, or a Diane Kay or a Sean Tracy. We reached out a little bit. But as we saw where we were in the pandemic, for a period of time, COVID is pretty much all we did. So we felt a need to have some true focus on the response, and we were able to free up Jay from his position as director of schools, and we now call him the director of COVID response, the director of schools for COVID response, and he's moved out of his wonderful office on the second floor down into the basement, nice little... And in turn, have welcomed Jason Smith as the acting director of schools for the Woodstock Ed Center. So Jason is the principal at Carleton North High School. And we did an expression of interest. Who would like to try being director for 10 weeks, 12 weeks, however long it's going to be? And a number of people expressed interest, and Jason was chosen to be director. So I welcome the two of them here tonight. Jay and I continue to work very closely together with Jennifer in the response to COVID, but Jay really shoulders the big responsibility now, and that's his focus. He doesn't worry about the director of schools, and I'm able to focus on some of my work. Not on some of my work, on all of my work.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. I'm pleased to let you know that 96% of our permanent staff are fully vaccinated. I'm proud of that number. I can tell you that 68% of our casual staff are fully vaccinated as well. I'd like to see that number increase. We submit this information to the Department of Education, and I'm sure the province will release provincial data on vaccination rates. This is important at this time because you may have heard in the news that all public servants in the province of New Brunswick will be required to be vaccinated by November 19th. And if they're not fully vaccinated on November 19th, then they'll be placed on a leave of absence without pay until further notice. So the rubber is hitting the road, so to speak, in terms of vaccinations. And there will be some individuals, 96% isn't 100%, and with 3,254 permanent employees, you know that there are some that need to make a decision as to whether they'll be fully vaccinated by November 19th or not. I can let you know that we've also made a shift to, as a part of the response, and this is all approved by Department of Education and Public Health, but whereas normally an entire school would have an operational day and shift to distance learning if there was a case that was found at the school, we are now in a different position where only the close contacts, so perhaps just the class, would make that shift to distance learning for a day. And families are able to pick up point of care tests. And instead of a full isolation for 14 days for those who are not vaccinated, and of course our elementary students, right, are fully not vaccinated, they're under the age of 12, the students can return to school and not have a full 14-day self-isolation if they participate in, and you see me swirling my hand because of the test involves taking the swab within your nose, the point of care test, if they test daily for those 14 days. So we provide the tests, and once 2 days, so the day that they pick it up and then the next morning, if they have 2 negative tests, they're permitted to come to school. And they just bring in the little cartridge and they show their teacher, and the teacher says thank you, and they throw them into the disposal bag, and they just bring in their negative test every day until the 14 days is complete. So that's something new in our province in terms of as a strategy to try and keep kids in school as much as possible. We've shared more than 1,500 kits for distribution. They've gone to schools, 7 different schools: Heartland, Liverpool Elementary in Fredericton, Stanley, Townsview School here in Woodstock, Meduxnikeag School here in Woodstock, Donald Fraser in Plaster Rock, and Tobit Valley in Plaster Rock. We've had some feedback, you know. We've seen parents reach out and say, you know what, the point of care test has worked. We were able to identify very early that actually our child has tested positive. So we know to automatically move to self-isolation and to request that PCR test. So it was good for a parent to share that feedback with us. When it comes to the logistics of handing out the tests, Jay takes care. Jay, I believe you've visited all seven of these schools, and Jay takes care of ordering the kits and ensuring that they get to the schools.
There's two schools missing from that list. They would have got an email on last night.
Oh, thank you. That's
Bristol,
right.
Bristol,
yeah.
And John
Bristol and John Caldwell.
Nine.
So nine in total. Yes?
Question just about stats around vaccination rates. Like, and I've had a couple of parents in my area ask about this too. Like, what happens? We've got 68% of casuals, so we're talking 32% of casuals who would not be vaccinated.
Right.
And there's 4% of a large number of full-time staff. So I think the window to get your first vaccine in order to hit that deadline that the premier set is today, or was yesterday.
Sorry, tomorrow. Yes.
What happens when those folks can't come to work? Like, what impact will that have on their child's school experience? And
right.
That may not all be known
yeah.
yet, but
it's not all known yet. And remember, these are employees, right?
Right.
So employees include those in the teaching staff, principals, vice principals, guidance, those under the world of the teachers. Then we have administrative assistants, school intervention workers, educational assistants, school library workers. We have bus drivers and custodians. We have community development advisors and IT staff. We have social workers and speech language pathologists. We have those that aren't in bargaining units, such as myself, and directors and coordinators. We have cafeteria staff, language monitors, enhancement staff. So it's a great big, it's a big list. We're assessing now what it'll be like. We remain hopeful that the vaccination rates will improve. And let's not forget that those who aren't vaccinated need to be tested regularly. And they have a stricter mask protocol as well. So
can you get a better handle on where we are in 19 November based on those who needed the first shot now? Do they have to declare that next to the pine?
They don't have to reveal that information to us.
That's part of the problem.
One of the concerns was recently there was a lot of buses where we were driving our kids to school, and we're like, well, we need to start prepping for that. Could that be an area where there's a shortage, or like someone who has a child with special needs or complex needs?
Sure.
That would fall about 58%.
Okay.
Right? Because like the EAs, the bus drivers and whatnot are the work at. Yeah. I believe, right, David?
Say that again?
The EAs and bus drivers and whatnot wouldn't be considered the FTEs in the 98% tile.
Yes, they would. Yeah. It's all when I say permanent staff, I mean 3,254 permanent employees. So employees being the overarching all staff members.
So you're looking at about 150 to
135 permanent employees not fully vaccinated at this time. Not, and I should even clarify that further if we want to be precise, not having shown proof of vaccination.
Right.
Yeah, there are some who might feel that it's not right to divulge their personal information. Yeah. And with casual staff, that is a number that we have here. Let me just check. Of the 68% fully vaccinated, that's 737 out of 1,083 on our list that have shown proof of vaccination. Out of that 1,083, 211 of those on our list have not worked a day yet. So don't be too frightened by the 68. It's actually much better, okay? That's an important distinction. Did I explain that right, Jane? Yes. When we did the count there, we have the 737 who have shown their proof of vaccination. They're on a list, and they want to work as casuals, and they've shown it. But we have 211 out of that 1,083, so a little less than 20%, that have not even worked a day yet. Yeah. So really, that 68% is probably more in the 80s. Okay, with vaccinations?
I guess a question on the vaccination part, just the procedure. I know the children can actually take home the test kits and stuff.
Yes.
What about staff?
Yes.
Are they allowed to show up at the door and say, I have symptoms, I need to get tested, or do they go for a test and miss 2 or 3 days of work or whatever?
Right. If staff have symptoms, they don't come to work, whether they're testing or not. So we don't want staff to come to work if they have symptoms. We will provide staff with point-of-care tests to test at home. And of course, now in our province, right, we've seen now that you can drive through, and as families, we can pick up point-of-care tests. So anyone who wants, it's a big move in our province, anyone who wants to monitor their own health through testing, it's possible. I'm talking quite a bit here now, but I'll very quickly let you know that we have had 240 cases in the Anglophone sector. That's not so much for me to report. That's a provincial number, but they keep that on a dashboard, right, Jay? Yes. But in Anglophone West, in September, we had 72 cases that were impacted in 16 schools. And in October, we had 23 cases. October's not finished yet, but we've had 23 cases that have been in 9 schools. So overall, we have had 95 cases. Our double-digit schools would be John Caldwell School with 21 cases, would be Andover Elementary School with 11 cases, and Southern Victoria High School with 10 cases. And I give credit, of course, I'm very appreciative of Jay and Jennifer for the work that they do in responding and in communicating. I feel very good about our communication process, and I also give credit to the principals who work very hard, and they respond when they get a call from me or Jay. They know that it means their evening is tied up, and off to work they go. So it's there's been great dedication there. I'll submit that as our COVID report. Nice to see the province trending in the right direction. And we'll hope that the schools are follow suit as well.
Any final questions on that? Yes.
Question I have, I guess, this past couple of years, there's been extra money from the government. I know you probably can't answer this question, but is there any talk of that? I mean, past year we had extra custodian hours,
for cleaning, that we had extra EA hours, you know, to help out with the COVID-type situations in the schools and stuff like that. So there hasn't been any extra money this year allocated that I know of, but, I mean, schools that I've been to, everybody is, they're calling it June stress already.
Mm-hmm.
And we're only into October, right? So
right.
Is there any talk from the department of money coming to help out some of the situations?
Yeah.
And not only that, there's a strike mandate coming up, too, that is going to play into this situation, too, so.
Right. Yeah.
So you may not be able to ask that, but it's a question that I would like to hear from somebody up there is, are they going to put some money towards this situation?
Right.
Help out?
I know last year, and perhaps we might talk about this more, Wallace, when we do the second quarter report. Sean might have some finer details on that. I have to admit, I can't recall an announcement or a directive that says we're giving you such and such money. But I do know that the province recognize. I shouldn't say that. The province is going to cover the cost, for instance, of Jay, right? And we would have done it anyway. We had to do it for self-preservation. But, you know, there's a cost associated with it. It's an extra position. So the province comes through, I find, when there's a need. But I'm not aware of initiatives, right? And that may change. And Sean may correct me on that one when we do the second quarter report.
Okay, thank you.
Any others? Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Next one is you also, district plan. It's pretty short, I think.
The district plan, that's right. We've worked very hard over the last several months towards the end of last school year and the beginning of this school year, our director team, to create a second one-year plan. We've decided on a one-year plan because of the state of affairs right now with COVID. We want to make sure that we continue in the recovery. And when I say recovery, supporting students who have had to learn in different circumstances. I'm flipping through my notes here to see that I've printed it. Do you remember if I've printed it?
Not in this folder.
No. Okay, it might be in the center folder.
Plan?
Yeah, do you have the plan right there? Thank you, Will. Tom. I have it in my folder. So traditionally, and according to the Ed Act, we would have a three-year plan, and we'll get to that. In fact, it's somewhat nice that we can postpone that a year because it'll align for the last 3 years of your elected mandate. So we have a one-year plan where we've created two priorities. The first is that district leadership will support teacher growth in assessment and instruction practices to meet students' learning needs. So the first one is all about meeting the needs of students, all right? They're learning in an environment that's a little bit different right now, and that's really what education is all about, right? So in order for students to have quality learning, we need to have quality teachers. And with quality teachers in place, we want effective leaders that are there to coach and support, and we need to make sure that we offer good professional development.
David, I was just going to mention that's on the portal.
It is.
Our last meeting, if you want to bring it up.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Thanks, Wallace. Our second priority is that senior administration coordinators and managers will collaborate with school administrators and district staff to implement the positive workplace framework to build an environment that supports well-being. So we recognize that we need to look after the well-being of students as well. We need to be there for them as they grow socially and emotionally, and that's an important priority to us. And it aligns with the DEC priority as well, one of the three that you have. Within our district plan, you'll see data that offers measurement of where we stand at this particular time and will help us measure our growth and our success. You'll see different strategies as well that will take place over the course of the year. Your former DEC chair, Kimberly Douglas, was involved in the early stages of this work, and I know our director team has pulled this together. We talk about the district plan intentionally at least once a month as a director team, and then as a coordinator team, it's also discussed, and everyone, as they create their work plans, keeps the district plan in mind. So it's important as well that the council supports our district plan. And although I presented a little more formally in November, according to the planning cycle, I do ask tonight if you'd offer your support for us to move forward with this district plan.
Everybody in favor of that?
Yes.
Motion on that?
Yeah. Kind of a motion in favor of supporting that plan.
Motion that we support the district plan as presented.
Second.
Moved by Wallace, second by Michael. All four, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any against? So moved, passed.
Thank you for your support to that.
Just a couple comments on that, Dave. I'd like to say job well done, because I've been to, I think it's three schools that I've seen their plans, their new plans, and they're actually aligning with the district plan, and this is actually aligning with some of our priorities on the DEC plan too, so it's all working out very well together. So, and I know they're one-year plans, which is very good. So,
good. Thanks, Wallace.
Great job.
Thanks, Wallace. Next item, David, for you also. We ask you for an update on school district activities in recognition of the first Truth Reconciliation Day on 30 September.
Sure. It was an important day for us. You met Sarah Francis a little earlier this evening. Molly Brown as well on her team, and they provided tremendous leadership along with their colleague Richard Champagne, who to coordinate and encourage and motivate schools to participate on September 30th in National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. You as a council made a motion, if you'll recall, back on September 23rd that called for the playing of the Woolastook Honor Song on September 30th. And I can tell you that 67 of our 69 schools played the song on that particular day. Also important to note on that day that there were 53 schools that played the honor song in place of the national anthem. And we all know that O Canada, our national anthem, is very important as Canadians, and actually it's a legislated responsibility for us to play it each day. But with your support, and rightfully so, the honor song was played in most of our schools in replacement of O Canada on that particular day. Although not required to, almost half of the schools acknowledged a moment of silence as well on that particular day. And there were 62 of the 69 schools that did some kind of school-wide recognition, but I'm pleased to say all 69 schools participated in some type of recognition at the classroom level. I can also tell you that almost all schools, when asked if they'll intentionally continue to share First Nations education in the weeks and months ahead, almost all of our schools said yes. Indeed, we plan on continuing this. When I asked Sue Young to help me gather this information, we have an electronic means of doing that through a survey, and it also gives the opportunity for schools to share examples. So I have many examples that I'm happy to share with you at some point if you wish.
Questions? In light of the word Sarah Francis gave us before our meeting started. I think it's very encouraging that all schools participated in one way or another. And I think, again, taking the words to heart, that this helps us in moving forward our relationship with First Nations community.
Also pleased to say that as a district, Jay, you'll remember, Jason, you weren't here on that particular day, but as a district, we took some time to gather electronically as well and had a good turnout. In each of our three education centers, we have the Wollastook flag that stands alongside the Canadian and provincial flag. Pardon me?
Larry had got me an extra flag. I have one inside because I didn't want to put it outside and get it ruined.
Oh, yeah.
So I got another one to put outside, so we flew it the whole weekend.
Great.
People ask questions.
Thank you, Jay.
Great. The next one is yours also, David. An update on the EA situation in the district. For the amendment to the agenda, could you also address, if you can, at this point, the local permit educators?
Sure. So you remember EAs, big conversations, right, at the end of last year with the former council,
yeah,
and the beginning of this year with an update for this council. We have projected a deficit when it comes to the budget line to cover the costs for EAs. I'll tell you to spare you the suspense, but we'll do the second quarter report here very soon, and I can tell you we're doing okay. We're still projecting a balanced budget, but there's some conversation that surrounds that. We had hoped to staff 738 EAs after looking at the funding available to us. We needed to reprioritize on a couple of occasions and put other strategies in place. And we began the year with 662 EAs. I told you I was nervous about that number, but that we would watch it very, very closely. And so far, so good. I can tell you that there have been some changes to that number. As always happens in those first 4 to 6 weeks of school, we saw 15 schools that did not have the same needs as early anticipated, which meant a reduction of 25 EAs in those particular settings. And then we saw 22 schools that had increased needs, which saw an addition of 40 EAs. So if you're doing the math, that's a net difference of plus 15, and we are currently sitting at 677 EAs in our system. I continue, and Sean will reassure us here in about 20 minutes as we do the second quarter report, and I'm committed to, as is Sean, to watching it very, very carefully. There has been some funding shifts that have allowed us to offset some of the costs associated with the extra EAs. I say 677. Let's not forget, we're funded for 589, right? So that was the original funding. So we're overstaffed in terms of funding by almost 100, but we're going to continue to find a way to do that. One of the big areas that we're seeing right now is as we work with the teacher staffing, there's been some wiggle room with that funding, and I'm really pleased to let you know that that the Department of Education in Thomas. Advance maybe I did. The Department of Education, I found out just yesterday that is allowing our district to keep the surplus that that we had at the end of last year. Remember, there was a signed agreement where we had to return any surplus because they gave us so much money and support. So that's added $384,000 to our budget that we won't see in the second quarter report tonight because we just found out about it.
But that will help overall.
That will help.
Balancing act.
Yep, that will help in the balancing act. So does that respond to the questions about EAs from
any questions
week?
On that? I think, sorry, Jim, go ahead.
In my most recent PSSC, the administrator was really concerned out of replacement EAs and it's not a good list of people that they can go to get. And I mean, I think she has five in the school, but because of illness or some other reason, maybe the regular can't attend on a regular basis, and finding those EA replacements is a real challenge for her. And in the same regard as the substitute teaching,
sure.
Or whatever. She was sounding pretty frustrated over. She was saying, "Well, you know, my staff is very cooperative, and when we end up with a day and there's no teacher to cover, you know, they're covering for each other or whatever, and things like that." But
right, it's interesting. I can tell you. That when it comes to supply teachers, we would see the same thing in mostly in rural areas, right? So I've looked up the numbers here. I sent a little note a bit earlier to find some numbers on supply teachers. We would have 504 supply teachers on our list, 342 of those are certified teachers, 115 are retired teachers, and 47 are local permits. So they don't have an education degree, not teacher by trade, but they have some expertise and they have a university degree or other type of training, and they've been granted a local permit. We're also working hard to try and address the pressures that exists with supply teachers. We have a district initiative that looks at that. Jay sits on that committee, actually. We've put some steps in place that provide some intentional support to local high schools that are in need, some long-term supply posting. We're also attending job fairs, and I think in particular of French and skilled trade teachers. Most of the job fairs are virtual. I think we're signed up for one that might be in person with the hopes that it'll go forward in the spring. So that's in the teacher world. In terms of EAs, I don't have that number on my list, but I can at my fingertips, but I can tell you that the competition for EAs opens up for a period of time, and we have a number of applicants, and I know that our HR staff is currently working on processing a number of applicants. So we're going to see the number of names on the list increase. I don't know, Jay, are you might not be a part of that. It's more the coordinators and HR.
We're still working on supply teacher.
Okay, you're working on the supply. Right.
So we are, like you just said, we did the supply teacher one where we opened it. We're adding more names. They're doing that with PEAs right now, I believe.
Right. So more names will be added.
Well, that's conflicting information from her because she said that they clawed back the ability to use local permits. So I'll have to let, because I got that from two of my schools, and that they said that they weren't allowing us to use local permit.
There's an order that they have to call. Jay, you can help me out here, but you're supposed to contact certified teacher first.
Right.
Then, Jay, it's retired teacher after that, and then a local permit.
So define pecking list of who you call first.
Do you want to add to that, Jay? You might.
What we've also done is we took and looked at all the schools that would have had certain, so many supply teachers attached to each school through it, through our, it's ASOP, that's our
ASOP,
but it's our filling, for lack of better words, it's a filling system. And so any school that have a lot of supply teachers, we're allowing those schools to have local permits. So most of the schools in the Woodstock Education Center, we're allowing more local permits to work up here. But in the Fredericton area and Oromocto area, we have a number, so many certified supply teachers that we don't need as many local permits. So this local permits are expected to work in the Woodstock Education Center if they want to.
So that that ASOP system works fine for, because teachers can turn that down, right? I mean, she can put in an order for a substitute teacher, and if the teacher doesn't want to travel to Chipman or Cambridge Narrows, or they can just say they don't want it.
Right.
But that, and then that would, if they had done that, and they still haven't gotten that position filled by 9 o'clock or 8:30 or whatever, they're stuck unless they can go directly to a local permit, who is somebody that's ready and willing to come in and help cover and supervise for the day.
Yeah. And those schools that you mentioned would be in that group.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can use local permits, I think.
Well, no, because she's under the impression that she can't use local permits.
Okay, we can look at that.
She can. Yeah, we can talk that through with her.
Perfect.
Sure, and I can tell you, Jim, that we have 340 casual EAs on our list, and many in the interview queue, is what Karen tells me. Yeah, so more being added. They're being interviewed. Yeah, okay, yep.
I think this is a very important topic for us for a variety of reasons, budgetary reasons, but also on the overall impact in schools and such. So I'm going to ask the superintendent to provide us an update on this at our next meeting, as well as address the how the local permit system actually works.
Sure. Would
okay.
you like that at our working session or in public?
I think our public session.
Our public session.
I just have one comment on the age, but I'm going to save it for the budget presentation.
Okay, thank you. The other last ticket, Karen, for this one?
How have we heard where do we think things are going as far as strike? What I'm seeing and hearing is going to happen real soon.
Sure, yeah. I can tell you that I'm not authorized to speak publicly about the strike.
Okay.
And to be quite honest, it's a function of the province and Finance and Treasury Board. Of course, there are updates that go through the Department of Education, because many of those QP bargaining units are a part of education. They're not all a part of education, but many are. And we'll... The superintendents and directors of HR get appropriate updates from time to time, but the spokesperson really needs to be a person from the province when it comes to that. It's outside the scope of my...
I guess beyond that, assuming worst case scenario, hoping for best, If we do roll into a strike, how do we feel that it's going to affect learning? Without the EAs, you're going to see more absences from teachers due to stress and whatnot too, and fatigue, which rolls back into needing substitutes. And you know, looking in the crystal ball, if you will, Do we have contingencies in place, or do we have?
Sure, there's conversations about what could happen based on any potential strike action that might be taken. We've all heard in the media that they have a strike mandate, right? They voted in favor of that's a possibility, and if if that happens, then there will be a quick gathering of the minds and rolling out a plan to respond and appropriate communication with families as well. Yeah. It really is. I know it's, I mean, it's not right for me to say to the deck, don't worry about it. You're vested in education. This is why you're here. But it truly is a function of the province at this time where they need to be the ones to speak on it when appropriate. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, can I move on to, TSSC issue, Montgomery.
So I was able to join Montgomery Elementary School, their PSC. They wanted to raise a concern around the parking lot surface. They had submitted a letter last year raising it as a concern, and this At their last meeting, a couple of the parents mentioned that they're feeling it's getting unsafe, that it's ruts, and more so concern around the uneven surface. So they asked if I could bring that and raise that to the board. They were
fair to be raised. That what would have to happen is I would ask for our facilities team. I can ask for our facilities team to have a look at it. And for a project of that size, consideration needs to be given in the capital improvement project, the annual capital improvement project. So I'm happy to note that and ask them to have a look and see where it should fall in the priority listing. That'll be presented to you in the spring, right? If there's danger, if they go and they see danger, then they'll respond.
Okay.
But I could ask them to go have a look.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, in the past, PSSC just wrote letters to the deck, right? Just to get it on that capital improvement list or whatever.
Say that again, Austin.
A lot of times in the past, we've got letters written by the PSSCs to try to get it onto the capital improvement
right.
list.
Sure. Yes.
Would you like me to ask them to follow up as well with the letter?
Why not? Okay, if you bring it to us formally that way, then we can formally ask the superintendent to have facilities look at it. He's noted now, okay, but that's a good process. And I've counseled PSSCs I've gone to, if you've got an issue with this sort of issue, there are a couple of ways to go. If it's an operational issue, first off, go to the director of schools for whatever area you're in. And if it's a deck business, send it up the line. Send it to the deck and then we'll address it there.
It is a small thing. I know we're over time, but they had a parent who owns a company that donated expertise to develop a sensory room in the school. But typically, I've worked with these consulting firms before in my past career, but it's an incredible donation from a company to guide them around setting up a space that I'll call it sensory managed for kids who have unique needs and who need a space to go and decompress. And I just thought that was pretty incredible for such a small school to have that resource and to establish that, and I'm hoping that COVID dependent, once it's up and established, they're picking paint colors right now. And
so is it an offer or is it a project already ongoing?
Underway, yeah. So I'll bring back some more details once it's a little further along to share. That's a great partnership with a parent and the community to do something.
Excellent.
I think K to 5.
Smooth room.
What's that?
Smooth room.
Sensory.
That's Montgomery as well, right, Mary?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, moving on to correspondence. Really, this is more information than anything else. You recall that we had an application to fill a vacancy for Sub-District 2. And we sent that nomination in to the minister, and that was dated on the 7th of October. Also dated 7th of October, we sent in our selection for the student representative, and that went into the minister as well. And the next one I have on there, we wrote to the minister back on, I think, the 9th of September, regarding the change of name, yes, 9th of September, changing the name of Hubbard Avenue Elementary School to Hubbard Elementary School, and received the minister's response on the 28th of September, accepting our recommendation and approving that name change. And I, by the way, sent that same letter off to the school itself, the principal, in time for them to mention at their PSC meeting that the name is formally changed. And then, just yesterday, I signed up a letter to the minister, forwarding again our request to appointment of First Nations counselor. It was essentially a repeat of a letter sent back in June by the previous DEC chair. And we were requested to resubmit that under this DEC's auspices, and I did that yesterday. That's the correspondence at this point. Moving along, superintendent's reports. We've got two reports. David, over to you.
Hey. Sure. I think, Jay, would you ask Sean if he could come in now? Put the report up on the screen.
That up, just another fun little thing from Montgomery. They raised $3,100 for Terry Fox, which is a significant amount of money for that fundraising effort, and to the point that the foundation recognized them as one of the top fundraising schools. And being from the era of Terry Fox, I'm like, that's pretty cool. Yeah, well done for that little school.
Yes.
Just the year of the budget one, please.
I'll do the budget one first.
Okay,
yeah.
So this is EL4 budgeting and forecasting. Reminder, this is 1 of 4. It's the first report you're going to get. So we'll get three other subsequent reports throughout the year. So again, going back to assessment and clever, you can put your first thoughts in. You can change your thoughts as the year goes out until the final end. And then we'll find out what Sean has at the end of the year.
Please don't judge me on my ability to zoom in.
Excellent.
There we go. Yes, please do judge me. So this is budget and forecasting report ASDW EL4. And we do report four times a year. This is called the second quarter report, and I'll just go through the report at first, but it's supported by Sean Tracy, our Director of Finance and Administration, who you're meeting for the first time, I believe. Sean, you weren't in the August meeting, were you? No. So Sean Tracy is our Director of Finance and Administration and works out of the Woodstock Education Center, but he is the DFA for all of Anglophone West. In this report, I need to ensure that the financial position doesn't get placed. We don't experience undue strain on our ability to maintain the focus on achieving a balanced budget. That's the goal, a balanced budget. And in fact, it's a legislative requirement for us to have a balanced budget. And it's important for me to ensure that or provide any prevention for loss of service for our stakeholders. Have to make sure that the financial management follow the generally accepted accounting principles, and that's why we have professionals like Sean on hand, and that if there are any discrepancies along the way, that we need to make sure we investigate them and report them as a part of the reporting cycle. There is legislation and policy that guides me and guides Sean in this activity, In the Education Act, there's certainly a section in the regulation. Please note the correction here. This should say 97-150. I missed a one there. So regulation 97-150, I talked to you a little bit earlier about the fact that there's the Education Act itself, and then there are four or five regulations. We did pass a balanced expenditure plan. I'll say we, Anglophone West did. Thomas and Wallace were part of the previous deck that approved that expenditure plan. Of course, in the Education Act, there are also responsibilities that I follow under Section 48, the duties of the superintendent, and there is certainly one in there on finances. And provincial policy, education policy 101, talking about how we have to make sure that we don't incur deficits, either a capital or an operating budget. I can let you know that Sean and his team, on my behalf, are very responsible in preparing the financial reports. And he has a staff of one manager, two assistant managers, and a number of clerks that process the work. And we will present you with quarterly reports as a part of that process. And of course, the evidence, if you want to click on any of these, I need to make sure I fix that typo the next time, Carol. It's regulation 97-150. And so that's the report. And now, perhaps a little more exciting is actually the numbers, the spreadsheet. And I'll pull that up. And although I like to talk about money, Sean is very proficient in this. And perhaps I'll turn it over to Sean, who might stand up and maybe go to the screen. And I'll scroll as you go, Sean. I'm going to make it bigger. And I'll start with the categories over here on the left and slide to the right.
So good evening, everyone. Nice to finally meet you. Welcome.
So, first question, which I'm reasonably confident I already know the answer to, is that there was a question asked about the catchment area, or at least the preliminary one, for the Hanwell School. There was a couple streets there in a subdivision area, the Deerwood subdivision. They are Fine Crescent, Team Drive, and Carriage Hill Road. They are, right now, they are zoned for Team Search and Gully. And I knew back in 2017 that this was going to happen. So I was at all of the 409 meetings for King Street Consolidated. So when the decision was made to let that remain as is, at some point the question was going to come up, well, if the Hanwell School does get built there, where are those people going to end up going? Because at the time, of course, the families and parents from Kingsclear wanted them to go to Kingsclear. But I guess something has changed over the last couple of years. And now, of course, there are people in that subdivision that no longer want to go to Kingsford Consolidated. Now they want to go to the new Hanwell School.
They want to go to a brand new school.
Yes. Mm. So the question is it a preliminary one, or is this ever going to be evaluated, or should those parents write in with a question to see if they can be done officially zoned to that, or is that basically they would be considered out of band?
I'm going to let the superintendent respond.
Sure. Thank you very much. Good question. And of course, would be something that's on the minds of many. When it comes to catchment area, it falls to the responsibility of the superintendent under the Education Act. And we've had some preliminary conversations on what that catchment area would look like, based on numbers and based on geography, of course. And we sent out communication, and in that communication, we've started by saying, generally speaking, if your address is Hanwell, then that's sort of what we're looking at. What was brought to our attention during the kindergarten registration process is that there is a small section of Hanwell that includes probably three or four different families, and perhaps the same zone that you're talking about that remained in the zone for Kingsclear. All of that was preliminary conversations, and of course that captured the attention, and they've written to me, and I scheduled a meeting for next week where we'll confirm the catchment area. So we'll confirm it. Our meeting is scheduled for early next week. We'll confirm the catchment area, and we'll communicate it out publicly.
Perfect. That's great. Second question is actually just from me specifically. So the, I believe, it's preliminary obviously, but I think for the agenda, because I was given earlier information from, I believe, either you or the district, or David, about November meeting, we'll have the selection of the principal for the Hanwell School. Is that correct?
So that's not going to happen. Our earlier plans saw us preparing for Hanwell based on securing a principal 1 year in advance. We were reminded of the fact that funding is provided by the province to secure a principal a half year in advance of opening. So we postponed our competition. We did it. We had a competition, and applications came in, and we postponed that competition. We actually canceled the competition. And in November, what will happen is we'll put out a posting for the position of principal.
Yep.
And qualified individuals will apply. We'll go through the hiring process in late November and December, and have someone named before the Christmas holidays. And that person will begin as principal of Hanwell effective January 1st. And have those 6 months to prepare for the scheduled opening of September 2022.
Perfect. So if the competition begins in November, because that was why this question came up, or I thought of this, because a specific principal that I had written a recommendation for I was asked for back in like April, March or April or something.
Yes.
Like that. And like, wait a minute, I thought that this had already happened. So I didn't realize it was postponed.
That's right. It was postponed. And it was just a logistical change, and we had, in our excitement, we had planned for the principal to be in place and plan for a year in advance. And the reality is there wouldn't have been enough work for that principal for an entire year.
Yeah.
There'll be plenty of work for that principal from January to June to get ready.
So, and if the competition opens, I don't want to take too much time out, it's really late already, but the so if the competition opens early November, is that being selected at the DEC meeting then in November? Or?
No, the DEC doesn't take part in the hiring of a principal. That's all a function of our office, yes.
Okay.
There will be a selection, DEC's involved in selection of the naming of the school.
That's right.
Right. When
and
is that
happen? At some point.
That's right.
Beyond 1 January.
I hope they name a room after me.
No, so there's if you look under Provincial Policy 409, which
yep.
you might be familiar with, there is a process for naming a school,
yep.
and it involves a naming, forming a naming committee, and the DEC is a part of putting together that naming committee, and that will happen soon. I think we wanted,
February.
Yes, well, yeah. we wanted to have the name by February,
so...
So I think we wanted to wait to make sure that sub-district 6 was filled,
mm-hmm.
so, which will be filled in the winter. Yes.
Yes.
So. Does that committee allow public members to sit on it the same way?
Yes. No.
Okay.
No. Sorry. Not public input.
Okay.
But the committee is selected. Mm-hmm. There's a selected... committee, and a member of the public is selected to be a part of that committee, if I remember correctly. I'd have to double check under 409, but it's the mandate of the committee is to seek support of the public, so that maybe they may choose
yeah.
to have an open meeting.
I misspoke there in a sense, but my recollection of looking back now is the fact that there will be community involvement in the naming process.
Okay.
Yes.
I was just going to ask if there's a committee for it formed, if I could sit on it. But
right. It hasn't been formed yet.
Okay. So my last question then with that, I know it's...
We had two.
two spawned other questions, though, is the other... So with that principal that I have written the recommendation for, since I assume he'll resubmit with his application with it, does it hurt any for me to send it also off to Carol and to you, David, or...
Sure. We have a process where applicants make their application. The applicant could give the letter to the applicant, and he or she could include it in their application package. If we ever have a member of the public that just writes a letter to us, we just slide it into the file.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Great. That's. I know it's a lot more than I originally planned on asking, but thank
mm-hmm.
you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for coming up here.
You're welcome.
Mm.
Any other online ones, Cheryl?
Let me just see. Hi, Jennifer. Is there anyone online that would like to have a public comment? Doug Dickinson and Jennifer Reed.
Hi, Carol. Just maybe Doug, if he has any comments, but not for me.
No, I don't have any questions. Thanks.
No?
I don't think so. If you're not typing anything, they're both muted.
Okay. So the other thing I'm going to say now is the fact that remind you that we have our working session on the 4th of November, and that will take place at the Fullerton Inn, I believe. But Carol will confirm that and send that out. And then our next public meeting is on the 25th of November. Both of those will take place in Fullerton. So you're on the road, Jessica.
I will be on the road.
And likely that will take place in Fullerton Inn as well. And so there's at least two items tonight that I mentioned will be on the agenda for the 25th,
mm-hmm.
both superintendent reports, as well as an update on the EA situation and local permit holders. Anybody else have any final comments? None. Motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Very motions. Seconded. Hi, Jim. All in favor? Yes.
Hey.
Yep.
Thanks very much. A safe drive home. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We just, like, take 2 minutes before, like, maybe let our guests speak.
Adjourn the meeting in this year.
Yeah. That's just for 2 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason.
That's a month.
Okay.
Yes, Mary.
Carol, we.